Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the third issue of Hey Kids Comics. Thank you for sticking with us this long. Tonight we bring you a very special episode in that we have an actual special guest this week for the first time. But first, as always, my co-host and producer, Jedi Cole Houston. Say hello, Cole.
Good evening. You know, and the funny thing is, up to this point, I thought I was the guest. It turned out I was co-host, and I didn't even know it.
Let me let everybody in on a little secret. Cole does the lion's share of the work around here. If he's the guest, I'm the worst host that anybody's ever had. I'm like, you know, you can stay here in the guest room if you want, but you're going to wash all the dishes, vacuum.
Worse than David Hyde Pryce in The Perfect Host?
Wow. Did you just...
I did.
Did you just go Frasier's brother? Did you just go Niles Crane up in here?
I did. I was all over that. Indie film. Go.
I've watched like half of that on Netflix. But anyway, I digress. We have decided to buck the norm of the first comic book arc. Cole has pointed out that usually the second issue is when you want to have your first guest appearance in your comic book. But Cole, what do?
I think we're going to tell Stan Lee to buck up and just get ready for a new norm.
That's right.
A third issue first guest.
And that would be the one, the only, Jasmine Wolf. Jasmine, say hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And the reason we bring Jasmine on is she's going to bring something special to the table for this issue. This issue, which I have titled for a reason I will hear in a second, Women in Comics. And the reason it has sort of a lame title as compared to the other titles that we've had is this. This is actually a fairly serious topic for me. It's something I feel fairly strongly about. And when I'm sitting around and I'm trying to come up with clever titles for things like this, I couldn't come up with something that wasn't A, pandering, and B, insulting.
That would be a tough thing to do. It would be easy to come up with something cute and then it would just come off like, okay, you're being an ass.
Exactly. And I didn't want to do that because this is important. Jasmine, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Because talking is hard. No,
It is.
Mid-20s, female, which is why I'm here. And I honestly haven't been reading comics that long. I've only been in the States since 2001, and I didn't get into comics until I was a little older and a little on my own. I started in gaming, did a lot of tabletop, and those happen in comic book shops, generally, which exposes you to comics, and I like reading. So I was like, hey, it's a thing. I should read it.
I expose myself in comic shops. That's why I'm not allowed in comic shops.
That's true. That's why I had to go to subscription service.
There's one thing I want to say, not related to this particular episode. When I'm describing the show, where people have listened to our zero episode, that, you know, I'll say the upcoming shows are this, this, and this, and, you know, a lot of the shows get recorded a week in advance or a couple weeks in advance, and I'll say this is what we talked about, and they'll say, oh, you didn't mention this or you didn't talk about this, and we didn't. We do have a limited time frame in which to speak about these things, but
there's also a damn good chance that some hot button stuff's going to crop up while this thing's being edited.
Correct. But here's the thing. In true comic book fashion, there are going to be certain, let's call them nemeses or themes that will reoccur. We will revisit. They will come back in different story arcs and different issues of the comic. So if there's something we didn't touch on, let us know. You can reach out to us on Twitter or through the Jedi Cole universe and let us know, and we'll hit them the next time it comes around. So
absolutely,
don't get,
because you didn't, unlike in the movies, the Joker comes back again,
exactly,
and again, and it's okay.
I'm going to put this on the table right now. One of our mythology episodes, one of our issues, I want to do the whole thing of why doesn't Batman, what are the ethics and why doesn't Batman just kill the Joker? I want to do that for one of our, so keep that on the back burner, but I want to do that because I have some very strong disparate feelings about that situation.
Absolutely.
But
we'll going to go in the episode where you talk about who in the DC universe actually dies and stays.
Oh, you mean Jasmine is wrong. That episode.
Yeah,
we'll do that episode too.
Jasmine is wrong.
Okay, guys, this ran a little long, but that's fine. Almost the part of the impetus for this entire show, this entire thing you're going to be listening to, hopefully for the rest of your natural lives, is because of this young woman right here. I decided I wanted to do a show. Cole and I sat down and put our, you know, two-headed Etna's heads together, you know, and came up with the idea and flushed it out. And
it's kind of like the Roman god Janus, only in reverse.
It is.
Which is much more uncomfortable.
It's more like we had a donkey costume and we were arguing who's going to be the ass. So Jasmine, being the comic book reader that she is and Twitter gadfly, posts on Twitter, name one character in the new, you know, in DC that has died and never come back from the dead.
Other than the Hawk and the Dove that I was aware of. I do want to preface that. There were two I was aware of, and I was like, who else?
So I say Vibe, because Vibe has never come back. Never
for
come back.
For good reason.
Thank God. For that, even though Jasmine, I have some really good ideas on what to do with him if he does come back.
I'm not on a limb here.
Artie, we can totally save Vibe, me and you, Andy, together.
Trust me, Cole be in on it too.
Yeah, but just don't tell George Perez. He hates Vibe.
But so she posted that. I said Vibe. And Jasmine, what did you say in response?
Well, but see, he's technically
No. What did you say in response?
I don't know. What did
you
I?
Said? You said, I talked to blah, blah, blah at the Blue, Blue, Blue about what's coming in the Blee, Blee, Blee. And they're going to bring back Vibe in the blah,
they
blah, blah. Technically.
Back.
Technically.
Back as of new Free Comic Book Day, May 1st. Vibe is technically back. And on top of that, you get on me for watching Young Justice and all of that terrible crash nonsense.
I watch Young Justice. I'm not one of the ones that gets on you. I'm not the guy that gets on. I love Young Justice.
But have you not watched? I mean, if you love
it doesn't
Young
count.
Justice.
That does not. That is not continuity. I will argue that one.
But
a 5-minute cartoon on Cartoon Network does not count as continuity. See, this is why. This is why. This is why this whole show is happening right here. Because she can't just say Vibe did not come back from the dead until the New 52, which technically everybody came back from the dead. See what I did there? On you. All right.
Okay, okay.
What happened here is Andy got mad at me for a technicality of using the word technically. Everyone
else
will
do that. If you listen to issue number one, you'll find out he will do that to you. But don't make me turn this show around. We need to get...
You're going
to
take our lunches away? All right, so...
We will revisit this issue, I assure you. But as your producer, I need to remind you, we're here to talk about women in comics.
Okay, we do have a show. Okay.
And there are a lot of things Vibe was to a lot of people, but women in comics was not one of them.
That's very true. It's very true. So... As always, we're gonna try to knock it down to three acts. The first act, and again, I'm not gonna do any pandering and sip at titles. So it is women literally in comics, the characters, the drawn and written characters in comics. And I guess the whole point of this show, this whole thing we're doing here, is it's always seemed to me, since I was very small, very young, that women get the short end of the comic book stick. And it's been that way. It's been that way since before I can remember. I come from a very strong female upbringing, and it never made sense to me why there weren't more strong female characters in comics that weren't Sue Richards or Janet Van Dyne.
And the thing about it is, you know, Sue Richards is a wonderful example to cite because at intervals she has run the gamut. She is literally the every woman of comics because at different points she has been the victim, the strong mother, the blonde. Bombshell, the intense hero who can just outdo all the boys. And it really depends on who gets their hands on her as a character, literally, as to what you're delivered over the many, many years.
But I guess my problem with it is this. She has been all those things until, and it almost defies whoever's writing it, until Reed Richards needs a sandwich. And then she devolves into, you know, Susie Homemaker, Stepford Wife. And that always bothered me. Jasmine, do you got anything to say about Sue Richards?
No, really.
This just became. Hold on.
Okay, yeah.
That just became the Jimmy Fallon, Justin Timberlake, Brothers Gibb sketch from Saturday Night Live. Do you have anything? No.
That's right.
I can talk on the homemaking shtick, though.
But you know what we're talking about, right? Have you ever read any of the old Fantastic Four?
No, like, I can't stand Fantastic Four.
I mean, you literally, because I think it was Reed that pretty much dispensed everybody's names.
Yeah.
He was waxing poetic the day they all discovered they had powers. Except for Ben, because either he or Sue, one of them, referred to him as a thing.
I think he referred to himself as a thing. And it's
but I think that it was sort of a conceit that he called her Invisible Girl, because what he really wanted to call her was Trophy Wife.
Well, and I mean, and even the name, and I'm not going to get to women's suffragey. Even the name, of all the names you could give a character, you give your wife the name Invisible Girl. You're not even here.
You're not even
in the room.
You're not even here unless Reed needs a sandwich.
That's pretty much it.
He doesn't have to leave the laboratory to get a sandwich. He can just reach and get it.
Exactly. Jasmine, what were you saying?
A woman's place is to be invisible, didn't you know?
Well, then this is – okay, so here's an important part. You've made a very important point. Women in comics, as far as I can see – and comics in general, as a reflection of society, has always been this kind of microcosm of whatever's happening in popular culture and in society. And it's – for better or worse, that's what it's always been. So in this time period when, like you just said, a woman's place is in the home, you're talking about a comic that was written in what, Cole, the 50s and the 60s when it started?
Yeah, I believe so.
Now, like, we fact check anything. We need a fact checker,
you know,
Rick.
You also bring up an interesting thing about, you know, just the name. Because you've got your big, burly Ben Grimm, who becomes The Thing.
1961.
Thank you. There we go. You have Johnny, who's the hothead, the young flaming youth.
Yes.
Who becomes a Human Torch. You have Reed, who, quite frankly, is a bit of a tool, so he becomes, you know, gains these useful powers that will be, you know, help him in his day-to-day life as well as being a superhero. And then Sue just becomes sort of like that fifth wheel.
Yeah.
Because she was...
In a team of four, she's a fifth wheel. Everyone else caught that, right?
Yes.
Exactly. That's the kind of math we do on this show.
You know why? Herbie. That's why. Herbie is higher in the echelon of the Fantastic Four.
Oh, wow.
Richards.
No, like, but you can
invisible.
That some of people could probably name fantastic villains over Invisible Girl.
So, I mean, that's... You have that. You have, you know, the whole written out now, Hank Pym beating his wife thing.
Yeah.
You know, like the backhanding of the one panel where he's just, you know, giving her the full on backhand.
And the thing about it is that was, you know, very shocking. And it also comes from a period before that would have made national news.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing there is Janet Van Dyne is an heiress. She's got the bucks. She's got the looks, and yet for the longest time in the comics, she was written as kind of a weak character outside of being a superhero. You know, when she wasn't out blasting bad guys, she was taking a lot of crap from her husband. And I think what they were trying to do, because, you know, at the end of the day, Marvel was always trying to be just slightly more gritty, or at least, you know, slightly more real world than DC. Though when DC did it, they did it remarkably. And I think what they were trying to suggest here is, you know, here's a woman with everything, yet as often happens in the real world, and not to justify this in any way, but, you know, the sad truth is that a lot of women who would otherwise be very powerful women succumb in that way. They become the Susie Homemaker when Reed tells them to make a sandwich, or they get backhanded by some jerk that they married.
That's true. No, and again, I think it was a reflection of what was happening. A lot of the... Now, Jasmine, correct me if I'm wrong, okay? Because you're the lady with the background on this. At the period of time when that was happening was like late 70s, early 80s-ish, okay, when James getting, you know, either verbally or literally abused in the comic book. And she was just verbally abused like crazy.
Yeah.
But that's when a lot of the kind of battered women thing was coming to the forefront.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
So again, we're looking at a microcosm of what was happening in popular culture and in society being reflected in the writings of the book. And again, I guess so. Jasmine, who can you cite? You know, those are the two big ones as far as I think probably the two biggest ones negatively as far as I can remember, because they stood out so greatly that Sue was just, you know, kind of treated like Robin, you know, the whole time. And then Janet, again, with the name and the powers, you're going to be our strong female lead that can shrink down to the size of a quarter and annoy people with your wasp blast until somebody big and strong can get there and handle the situation.
Sting people.
You can sting people. Who can you cite for us that maybe goes the other direction? You know, when did it start turning around as far as strong female characters go?
I don't know when, because like I said, I'm newer to comics. But I've been keeping up with New 52 from the DC a lot, and I have been more impressed than I think people are giving comics credit for with a lot of the positive aspects of what are coming out with women. Wonder Woman is the one that I have been enjoying the absolute most for how well they're doing her character in her own line. I haven't read how she is in the New Justice League, but in the Wonder Woman comics themselves, it's been a really diverse look at a lot of different facets that make her a strong and believable female character.
Well, Wonder Woman is a perfect example to cite, in fact, because she does have that sort of, you know, even though she was created by a feminist, a male feminist, of, a man who was very much involved with the feminist movement of his day, he, I think in other people's hands more so than his own, but I think even to a certain degree in her early days, she was a very strong female character, yet how often, you know, in the 40s and stuff, was she tied up?
Yeah.
And at the mercy of some male brutish character. And, you know, over the years, she's had some ups and downs, but she's really one of those characters that began to hold her own in about the 60s. And then they decided to literally destroy her. I think it was sometime in the 60s or early 70s, where they decided, well, what Wonder Woman really needs to do is not have any more powers. We'll give her this, just the blandest ass costume you could imagine.
Oh, are you talking about that white jumpsuit?
Yeah, the white
woman from Uncle cat jumpsuit.
The outrage that came from that was probably one of the earliest times you could cite that comics, apart from, you know, the whole Seduction of the Innocent bullcrap, was that they really made news. And,
yeah.
You know, not for the least of which that Gloria Steinem herself publicly decried the fact that they pretty much ruined the only powerful female character in the history of comics at that point. But the interesting thing is she survived that period. She came back, and over the last 20 years or so, has really, especially in the last 10 or 12, DC's been making a concerted effort to get her in the forefront because she is considered one of the big three at DC.
She's one of the Trinity, yeah.
Yeah. But yet, you know, Batman, she's always been in Batman and Superman's shadow, and at least they're making the effort to make her an approachable character. And if you ever get the chance, look for the run where Greg Rucka was writing.
Oh, man.
Because he really retooled the character and made her into, not only her into a powerful female character, but other characters, her supporting cast. Also, when George Perez took over Wonder Woman, when they relaunched at number one, another great period where Perez understood how to write a strong female character, even supporting characters like Etta Candy, who had been around for decades and was always just sort of this, you know, chubby comic relief, you know, the girl you were forced to take with you on your date with Steve, who's so dreamy.
For car of her universe.
You know, yeah, she was the just comic relief, and Perez made her into a human being.
So, Jasmine, what are they doing with her now?
Everything. I don't know. She. No, it's been a really, really interesting read because she starts out as sort of saving the damsel in distress, except she's the one saving the damsel in distress, which was an interesting view because we generally put a male in the role of saving the damsel in distress. And so that was fun to watch. And then she starts playing, they play a lot with this whole mythology background behind Wonder Woman and the whole parentage of the gods and things like that in messy, interesting ways, which is really fun. And she essentially, with the help of some other characters, tricks gods into sort of all tricking each other, which was an odd but interesting setup to watch. And then it sort of all revolved around her as opposed to her being a part of something else. Like you'll see in when she's working with Batman and Superman, is Batman and Superman tell her what to do. And instead she's telling other people how this is going to go down. And so she has this leadership role, and then she gets herself, as Cole has wonderfully pointed out, a little tied up with Hades, where he doesn't quite play the same game that everybody else does. And she manages to get herself untied up all on her own, which is something I like about Wonder Woman. Like, as a woman, there's a lot of times where you feel tied up in a situation against your will. But it's a lot better to know that you can untie yourself than you have to wait for someone else to come and rescue you.
But what you need to realize about her in the period of time that Cole was referring to it is that we're not talking about just tied up here.
Right. Well, and
I think that needs to be mentioned for the show as well. You know, is that she was like S&M tied up. You know, it was like it was pretty bad. It was like it was almost like a fetish magazine type thing at that period of time in the time period in which Cole's referring to it.
Right. Well, and I was trying to say that has changed.
Oh, absolutely.
Change.
No, and that's good. But no, and I wasn't saying that you were wrong. I was just saying for a point of reference, when we say when Cole's referring to her getting tied up, like at that period of time, it was acceptable for her to be tied up as a superhero, like an S&M type fetish.
And also, you know? You have to look at the female character for decades, the comic was literally looked at as a boys' medium, that young men, you know, boys and young men might read comics, but, you know, it wasn't something that was ever really marketed toward girls or women. Not to say that they weren't, there weren't, wasn't a readership, but it wasn't one that was widely recognized. And the really nice thing is that we're seeing a greater recognition, and we'll get into that a little later. But in many ways, the way the characters are written reflect that change in dynamic.
Correct. So who's writing that right now, Jasmine?
Who's writing Wonder Woman? Oh, fact-checking.
Fact-checking.
Oh, like I'm going to be able to pronounce that. Brian Azzarello?
Okay. Very good writer.
Yes.
I'm not surprised you're getting good quality out of that particular writer.
So, you know, we've kind of, you know, as best we can, discussed how it's come full circle with characters. Granted, like I said, we've left out a lot.
Oh, sure. Because we don't have a choice. I want to touch on the fact really quickly, the nature of the costume, the costumed character. You know, prior to the show, we did a little test run, make sure everything was going to record fine, the audio and everything was working. And, of course, Power Girl comes up immediately as sort of the single best example.
And see, I was really hoping you'd bring this up, because since last night I have thought a lot about this. The thing that really struck me with the whole comics thing is also the bigger problem is the duplicity in what we have a standard for in real life. Like if you look at the Olympics, which are coming up in 19 days or whatever it is, have you noticed how the men's gymnastics uniforms look an awful lot like what maybe a male Green Lantern would wear? And the women are in little leotards like the female Green Lanterns are and things like that. It's like we have these same sets of costumes in everyday real life for real people who aren't.
Very true.
It is. You're absolutely right.
And then even on a level beyond athleticism, if you look at, say, what's portrayed in media, look at like a panel of judges for something like X Factor or American Idol. The men show up in jeans and a T-shirt. The women have to be cutting edge fashion. It has to be form fitting. It has to be colorful and or just plain black. Low cut is generally appreciated. Things like that.
Appreciated.
But we need to I think they're also perpetuating the unfortunate truism that most men don't give a rat's ass.
Right. If Paula Abdul had showed up on American Idol in jeans and a T-shirt, it would have been held, despite the fact that Simon Cowell and Randy Jackson on either side of her were wearing exactly that.
Precisely. And there would have been such public outcry. How dare she?
Right.
And, you know, the thing about it is, if you look at the costume and of the female character, it's run the gamut, and it really comes down to, you know, artist, publisher, etc. But very rarely do you have a male character who might even be considered remotely titillating.
Vibe.
Like, you know, Namor is like the only one who runs around in a posing pouch, but pretty much everybody else.
Hercules.
Yeah, well, yeah, Hercules, he's got that strange little harness thing going on. But, you know, in all fairness, he is an Olympian, so really his fashion sense can't be judged.
Based on mere mortals?
Yeah, mere mortals. So, you know, where he comes from, wearing a harness is a pretty much everyday thing.
That's what you wear to the grocery store.
It's not a fetish thing like it is here on Earth.
But isn't that, Jasmine, isn't that what I was just saying about, you know, comics being the lens, comics being the lens at which we view society in our medium? It again, a reflection of what's happening in society on the pages of comic books. And women are continually still, regardless of how much in the world we say, oh no, everyone's equal and men and women are equal, we see it in the comic books. And then, like you just said, I was thinking about it, and all of a sudden it relates totally to real life.
Right.
You know, it's not fair. It's not an
equal thing. You know, the point there is very valid. The other kind of the heavy duplicity there is, you, for example, look at Hawkman and Hawkgirl through the years. You know, Hawkman always ran around with a bandolier in his bare chest, and Hawkgirl had a fairly demure, you know, she was very plain, sort of, you know, yellow top and the green pants and everything. And then you get to the modern Hawkgirl with the bare midriff and the very much accentuating the female form. You had the two-piece Supergirl when the hot young Supergirl comes into town. You begin to see a greater degree of accentuating to the point of ridiculous, because Supergirl notwithstanding, because regardless of whether she's wearing, you know, a full, you know, floor length dress or she's wearing a two piece bathing suit, her body by its very nature is going to stop a bullet. But if you're going to go out and, you know, if you're like a normal person, you may, you know, be the height of physical perfection, but still, it'd be nice to have some cloth on your body when somebody's trying to punch you.
Well, it's that
they're
old...
made of sand, or, you know, they've got flaming hands or whatever their power is.
It's that old thing with female fantasy armor. Like,
oh, yeah.
If you look at Boris Vallejo or any of those guys that would draw the women in armor riding dragons or
exactly.
three-headed.
You look at the old Dungeons and Dragons books.
You look at the modern Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm looking at them right now, literally looking at them.
I knew you would be. But yeah, you look at like all the humans and dwarves and elves, all the men are dressed in plate armor or chainmail or gorgets and jerkins.
They're greaves and they're full plate armor.
Yeah, and then you look at the women and they're, you know, practically undressed. I guess, you know, because what I'm getting at rather is you're still going to be zeroing in on pulling that boy through puberty with some hot chicks on those pages.
That's true.
And it is by no means justifiable, but that's what's behind that.
It's a very phallocentric injury.
You know, that's why Jocasta looks like a hot babe made of metal and not, she doesn't look like Robbie the Robot with an eye.
That's true. So I want to talk a little bit about the other side of this. You know, I think, again, you know, you'll hear it a lot. We're pushing the time barrier here. We're time lording it a little bit. But I kind of want to talk about, I want to skip over the women creators for the time being. And I want to go to what I think is a stronger point, which is women who read comics and how they're perceived and how they're treated and how they're how they might be pandered to or how they, you know, might be looked down upon. I think that's maybe poignant, especially since Jasmine was telling me a story that she thinks that maybe this is what's happening in her comic shop. But so it kind of sparked my attention to this. But Jasmine, how have you been received as a comic reader in the world, as it were?
Now that I'm married, a lot of people assume that I'm into comics because my husband is into comics.
Oh, God.
So the funny story there is I got my husband into comics.
Excellent.
We played tabletop games together, and I was like, look, it's a thing, and we should read it. You know, he didn't, I don't know. He'd rather read real books or something. I don't know.
Oh, God. He's one of those guys. Like, I'm going to read a biography. Like, what?
No. But he does have, like, the entire Discworld, like a shrine of Discworld.
Well,
a lot of those things.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. And that's what he prefers. Like, he got a Kindle for our anniversary. And there's now, I don't know, 400 books on that thing. And he is so excited that he could just carry around 400 books. Like, that is as happy as he could be. And so I was like, you read this thing that I read. And that's how I got him into comics. And so at our comic bookshop, the subscription list is all under my name. The account is under my name and things like that, because I'm the one who cares. I'm the major comic reader. And then he reads the comics that I shove at him and I'm like, you should read this. And then he does.
That's really good.
Yeah. And he thoroughly, thoroughly enjoys them. I don't want to say that he doesn't, but it's the other way around. My husband didn't get me into comics. I got him into comics. And that's never what people think. Or even they're like, really? And I'm like, why would I lie to you? Like, why are you questioning this?
Most couldn't even conceive that that was possible.
Yeah.
Because it's outside the realm of you know, anyone's experience for the most part.
Or people assume that geek guy met geek girl and they both read comics and then they sat around and read comics together and fell in love or whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how love works, right?
Well, then it also becomes almost like, I don't know, I'm probably the only one who's seen this. Andrew may have the movie Free Enterprise.
Of course I've seen it.
Yeah.
Jasmine, side note, sidebar, if you haven't seen Free Enterprise, do yourself a favor.
You must see Free Enterprise. It will speak volumes to you. But it's rather like the scene in the comic shop when she grabs the Sandman hardcover that he was wanting to get. And he's trying to talk her out of it, saying, well, you know, I think you probably think it'd be fun or nice to buy that for your boyfriend or whatever. And, you know, she immediately quashes that by pointing out that not only does she read Sandman, she reads a whole litany of other titles, and, you know, like it's any of his damn business. He can't imagine this, you know, that that's even possible. You know, just seeing a girl in the comic shop is unusual enough. And that's, God knows that's a running joke on Big Bang Theory, but...
It's a running joke everywhere, you know?
And it's not completely true. I mean, I tell people that I game, tabletop game, in a group with two other girls, and they sort of sit around going, where did you find that many? Like, three girls in the same group? That's unfair to all the groups without girls.
You need to spread that around a little bit, right?
You need to trade out.
It's a surrogate program here.
That's right. Two of you need to get traded out with guys from other groups to help rebound. But no, that's exactly. And the thing about it is that.
But the
running
problem
joke,
is we like playing with other girls because then men don't tell us how to build our characters because they think we don't know how to. Because and I'm know, like, I can do this. Thanks. I got it.
Yeah, because they know better or something.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is the really nice thing is that joke, the running joke of the girl in the comic shop, thankfully is becoming. Little by little, it's becoming stale.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing to see, because I think there were always women into comics. And the real problem was the publishers who initially thought, how do we get women and girls into comics? And they started to create pandering titles. And the reality was, most of the women who I've ever talked to who have read comics on a regular basis didn't start out with Betty and Veronica.
No.
They didn't start out with Millie the Model or any of that. That was, you know, or even stuff like Little Mermaid. I mean, unless they were very young. I mean, stuff that was aimed at girls when they're still girls, like little girls, that's different. Because little kids' tastes are going to go toward the familiar. But as you mature, you're going to seek out the wonderful thing, I think, was things like the Vertigo line, because that began to speak to a male and female audience, because it spoke to sophisticated people, not to genders.
That's true.
And so things like Sandman and Swamp Thing and just a slew of, you know, one-shot titles and things like Paradox Press that were written to a fairly adult or at least mature audience that spoke something other than, I'm a girl's comic.
Right.
Or frankly, I'm a boy's comic, you know.
But the flip side to this is, and I've experienced this myself, the flip side to this is, isn't there a reality in the – and I'm saying this, and I only say it because I've experienced this, and I don't claim to understand the psyche of a woman. I never will.
I don't either.
But isn't there some truth to the and possibly to the flip as well? I'm a woman. I'm going to read comics because this guy I like reads comics. And one out of maybe 10 of those women actually, you know, enjoy it and start reading it, whereas the rest of it is pandering to try to get a man. It's like watching football
or precisely. Me
watching, you know, Say Yes to the Dress or something like that. It's not the same situation as Jasmine just described, where, you know, she got her husband into comics. It's the, you know, I'm going to read comics to try to impress a man's, you know.
There's less of that than people really think. And one of the reasons is because we do have this fantastic slew of comic book movies, and women are much more likely to get into the movies. And so they'll be like, well, I don't really want to read Avengers, honey, but I'll go see Avengers with you. And then I can tell you how much I like Tony Stark or whatever. You have shortcuts. You have ways out now that maybe you didn't use.
That is a very good point. But also, you know, I think that while in Jasmine's case, you know, you were already a comic reader and you got your husband in. And as rare as that may sound at first blush, it's probably not as rare as we might imagine.
Correct.
But at the same time, exactly what Andrew is mentioning, I think there was a lot of that. And that's where in the perception lies that, you know, if you're a woman who's interested in comics, chances are you got into it because your boyfriend, you were trying to impress somebody. You're into it, just you married into it, as it were. But at the same time, I think even when that happens, there's so much good stuff out there. Because I've introduced the only comic that I will routinely introduce to all comers.
Oh, here we go. Oh, God.
Yeah, you know it. If you haven't read Watchmen,
oh my God,
go buy a trade paperback. You can find it at most Half-Price books if you're if you want to go cheap. But, I mean, that's the one thing that I've introduced to more non-comic readers. And in many cases, that's probably the only comic they'll ever read in their life. But universally, I cite that as a great example of if you hit the mark well enough, it doesn't matter your background, your gender, your experience with comics, anything.
Watchmen and books like Watchmen, but books as good as Watchmen are transcendent of gender or anything that you can label. They're just good literature, and that's the way that is. Jasmine, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
What was I saying?
I don't know. What were you saying?
Well, I was gonna. You guys clearly have a history with Watchmen, and I am so afraid to touch that right now.
You should be. You should be.
You should be very afraid. It will change you.
But honestly, I would think that if you're trying to think of a comic to just hand somebody, anybody, to get into it, I would have picked what we said earlier as Sandman. I have more female friends who aren't necessarily comic readers at all who have enjoyed Sandman. Sandman is the one I got my mother to read.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. And I could never get my mother to read Watchmen. Are you kidding? There's a penis in that.
Constantly.
A lot of penis.
If it's any consolation, though, if you haven't actually encountered the book itself, it's not the kind of mega schlong you get in the movie.
No, we have two copies. We have his and her copy. Don't worry. But I still don't think I could get my mother to read it. And even some of my female friends who might even read manga and not necessarily American comics, I don't think I could get them to read Watchmen. But I could get them to read Sandman.
So what's worse, Power Girl's costume or Dr. Manhattan's giant blue schlong?
Neither, I think. Think they both have their place in the right situation.
Do they really? Do they really? Power Girl's giant boob window and Dr. Manhattan's giant blue schlong. The comic culture cannot live without either of them in particular situations.
Well, Dr. Manhattan is a whole commentary on how he just has no thought or whatever to close. Yeah.
He is so out of touch with his humanity that he becomes almost, in a way, childlike, in that at a certain age, you can go running into the kitchen with no pants on and tear ass through the whole house while company is there. And I found out the hard way. I am no longer of that age.
But all I'm saying is I realize it's done for effect. And, you know, it's the Gibbons Moore mentality. And that's fine. You kind of get the point. You could have been drawn from the back a little more, Dr. Manhattan. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I don't think either one is worse than the other.
No, no, no. I think they're equally, I want to say horrible, but I know that's not the right word.
I think Manhattan's dork serves more of a purpose to,
it does,
for lack of a better word, drive the story.
And if we're going to Power Girl bash here, we need to keep in mind who's drawing Power Girl at the time, because there is a really big difference between sexy as an objectification thing or as an empowerment thing to bring up women who create comics. Sorry, Andy, I'm stealing that from you. But Amanda Connor draws an amazingly empowered yet sexy Power Girl.
That is true.
And
that's valid. That's valid.
And so who's drawing Power Girl makes a difference about how ridiculous whatever level of Power Girl is going on, because some of us who are women like to also have that whole sexy empowerment thing. Like, I hate it when feminism takes away our femininity, which I just said wrong.
Femininity? C-anemone? Femininity?
Femininity is a very dangerous. Jacques Cousteau wouldn't even go after those.
That's what got Steve Irwin.
Femininity.
You are absolutely correct. I agree with you wholeheartedly, but that being said, you've got Batgirl, like some of the Jean Grey, not the Marvel Girl Jean Grey, but like the actual Jean Grey, you know, from like the Dark Phoenix days, where it's not, you know, there's no boob window that could have been drawn out at some point. There's definitely some sex appeal there, but there's definite empowerment as well. I just think that Power Girl might be pushing the envelope of the tipping point one versus the other.
But in a way, also, is it speaking to, or can it speak, I should say? I mean, granted, I'll give you, a lot of these were designed by guys. Most of them were designed by guys.
99% were designed.
Who wasn't designed?
Yeah, exactly. But the thing about it is, it's what you do with what these guys created back when they're like, boobies. And, you know, like you were talking about, that drawing Power Girl in an empowering way where she can still advance her femininity, yet at the same time still be a very powerful, very real character versus, and the difference I think there is, do you draw Power Girl gripping her knees and thrusting her breasts forward in a cheesecake way, or do you choose to portray her as, okay, her costume is just part of who she is? But also, you know, when you have characters like this, are they, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Power Girl was from whatever the hell Warlord was from, in the center of the Earth. You get characters like Starfire, who's from an entirely different planet.
Oh, God.
You've got Supergirl.
Starfire suffers from what Dr. Manhattan suffers from.
Yeah. But the thing about it is, you have
I don't know if you guys are up on New 52, but Starfire's armor in issue 10 of Red Hood and the Outlaws was amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was very amazing.
So, unfortunately, I don't know if that's them trying to fix the negative light that Starfire had from the beginning, or if it's, I don't know, because...
But, you know, you have to say, as a character, is Starfire, you know, is she just a complete tramp? Or are we looking at that character from a human standpoint, where on her world, she might be dressed appropriately for addressing their government or something? And then at the same time, do you have to ask, okay, do we create these alien characters who are incredibly sultry solely so we can get away with it?
Right.
With that
The problem with Starfire was that Starfire had a history, and Starfire's history did not solely exist in the pages of Teen Titans and what the 52 issue story arc and all of those. Starfire's presence was also felt in like the Teen Titans cartoon and things like that. So when you have that kind of character built, you have a responsibility when you put a cartoon on like Cartoon Network and your young women are watching it, and by young women, I mean girls, are watching it and identifying with a character. And then all of a sudden, in the first and second issues of this book you release, she's like, I'm banging all the dudes on Earth, yo, look at this, boom, bam. What, you know, what does that say?
Right.
That for me was offensive as hell. I'm sorry.
And not even that, but DC does these cartoons really well. And that should be, you would think, a good stepping stone from I watched this on my TV and I liked Teen Titans to, hey, here's, I'm going to get into comics now.
Oh, absolutely. That should be a perfect marketing tool.
And so when they do things like that, and I agree with Andy, when they do things like that, they are closing doors faster than anything else. And that's really frustrating.
And it becomes rather like, you know, the very Americanized, homogenized, what we were talking on the United States of Geekdom recently about the early days of, anime before it was called anime in the States. Mm-hmm. Back when it was just a weird cartoon where everybody talked fast. And then many years later became known as Japanimation and then ultimately anime. But people who watch sort of the homogenized American translated versions with their kids, and then they would go like, oh, you know, this is that show they like, and they'll go buy, you know, rent something at Blockbuster that's the, you know, maybe a subtitled translated version uncut from its original Japanese release, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa. And I think that's a bit of the same kind of shock there that you're talking about, where you have that sort of innocent entree into these things, and then the other, you know, the primary source for this character is something that's written to an entirely different audience.
I agree. I mean, I don't think what you were saying about boobies, you know, I think the Starfire thing in my mind is absolutely, without a doubt, the worst for them. You know, I mean,
that
in my mind is the most glaring example of, okay, we've established this character. This is a strong female in the as George Perez wrote, you know,
absolutely.
She was a strong female character. She was one of the few really strong female characters at that time.
Well, in fact, she was deliberately written to have raised herself from just very tragic, terrible past of subjugation and humiliation.
Yeah.
And she rose above all that, and then to just sort of demean her as some sort of, street trash tramp.
Matter of fact, Jasmine, did you ever read the old Teen Titans stuff? Or is that before your time?
I can't say that even if it was around during my time, it was the kind of thing I was reading at that time.
Actually, unfortunately, it probably wasn't, because the Perez-Wolfman or Wolfman-Perez period of Teen Titans would have been the mid-80s.
Oh, well, I was busy being born.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember. Yeah, I was just a little baby.
Go ahead, Jasmine. I'm sorry.
Oh, I really didn't start into things until, I mean, I wasn't even raised here in the States, so I didn't have that exposure until 2001 and didn't really start into comics until 2005 or 2006.
Sure.
So
if you want to go back and read them, I would suggest it. And the reason I would suggest it, because now that I'm thinking about it, I'm actually looking at my collecteds on the bookshelves and I'm thinking about it. That is really, in my opinion, when I started to see, going back and reading kind of continuity of things, and because I'll buy whatever I can get my hands on usually as far as collecteds go, that's when I really started to see the female character being brought into its own was in that run of comics, at least for DC.
Okay.
Because you had Starfire in there, and you had Raven in there, and you know they were constantly introducing new female characters that were strong female characters, not over sexualized.
They took Wonder Girl and elevated her from her, you know, rather simplistic Teen Titans origins. She was one of the original Charter members, and they took that character and made her into a strong adult female character who, you know, was able to very successfully live down the kind of goofy childhood of her early days in comics.
Now, we are talking about pre-New 52.
Yes, right. this is way, way before 52.
I have a feeling that Jasmine has some strong feelings about post-New 52 Wonder Girl, don't you?
Yeah, I took that off my pull list pretty fast.
Now, is the post-52 Wonder Girl Cassie Sidmark, or have we gone back to Donna Troy?
No, it's Cassie.
Okay. So that's a whole different ball of wax there.
Yeah, the Donna Troy new 50, the Donna Troy Wonder Girl was pretty awesome, but the Cassie Sidmark Wonder Girl's like, eh, what?
Yeah. So,
why do you hate it, Jasmine? Tell us why you hate it.
Well, I didn't read that far into it. Unfortunately, the Teen Titans in the New 52, I didn't feel that its writing was particularly good, and it was leaning far too heavily on Superboy. I mean, to follow anything in Teen Titans, you have to be reading also the Superboy comic that's on its own. You can't have one without the other, and then everything is so heavily slanted towards that, and the only people who are sort of pulling the other direction are Red Robin and Kid Flash, and there's a couple female characters, and one is just bizarre, and the other is Cassie, and neither of them are relatable, and both of them are just sort of there because Teen Titans can't happen without girls or people will get mad, but that doesn't mean that we actually have to write them in and give them lines, right?
Also, it suffers from X-Mendrome.
And on top of it, Cassie's written in such a way that she keeps vying her attention in all the wrong ways.
Oh.
Because nobody is writing her in as a legitimate character. Instead, she's this character who's trying to get written in and not, it's just, it's a mess. It's like watching, I don't know, a little middle school girl trying to play basketball with the high school basketball team. It's not fair.
And the sad thing about that is when that character was introduced, they actually gave her some teeth early on, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. They did.
Blew something up.
Well, not, I mean, in pre-New 52.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, yes, when she was introduced pre-New 52.
Because she's in the pre-New 52, she was the working for or had some tie to Ares.
Yes.
Back then. And she ended up with God weapons. And I think she got kicked out of school for doing something. You know, they did give her some teeth. They kind of made her tough and stand on her own-ish. And again, another strong, viable Teen Titans woman candidate. Somebody that can, a female character that can stand on its own that was later, you know, wrecked in the relaunch of the DC Universe.
Yeah, and I have to wonder if they were trying to, you know, if they are trying to relate to something that they think needs to be related to. And the reality is they're missing the mark.
This is making me wonder. You brought up a point, and maybe I'm totally off here and you guys would know better. But it's making me look at this and all of the female characters that were like, this is a strong female character. And I thought of another one while you were talking about Cassie was Mia, the female Speedy, sidekick, Green Arrow, all that. All of these really incredible, strong women come from such a background of horrible diversity where you don't have somebody who comes out of a completely average sort of background and is still able to be a strong female. I don't know of any. Do you?
No. No, I don't. And that's a huge point. Yes.
Because like my husband, Jim, he really loves Superman to ways that I can't understand. But I know one of the reasons is Superman is a Kansas farm boy. And my father-in-law is a Kansas farm boy. And that's very relatable to Jim. I mean, he says that his father is Superman in ways that not everybody, and lots of little boys claim that, not everybody does relate to that Kansas farm boy thing. There's not a super relatable, I've come from a normal background and so did this superhero for girls.
That is a very good point. I'm really trying to rack my brain for any of the characters that were at least developed to a certain degree, in recent years anyway, that might have come from a normal home.
Because female characters in comics have never been able to be just people.
Yeah,
you know, they can't be just, you know, they can't even be a Bruce Wayne. They can't even be somebody whose parents died, you know, and so you became a superhero. They've got to come from worse than that.
Yeah,
you know,
they've had to ramp it up from being an orphan to being like an abused child, or from a, you know, both parents were drunk and never home and you had to live off the cracker crumbs 3 days a week.
It's Oliver Twistian stories.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's, I think that there's this idea in comic books that that's the only way you're going to get somebody to read a female character, which is a total farce. But I think that that really exists, Jasmine. I think you're brilliant.
I think I'm about to prove myself wrong. That's a great combination here. But what about Babs? What about Barbara Gordon?
That's
a good point, because she really didn't have a troubled childhood.
No, I mean, she had a hard life, but we like to think that everybody does, and we all equally share in our own pains in some way. I mean, her daddy loved, and that's not even something we see a lot of. And I know one of my big complaints about New 52 Batgirl, of which I have a lot, but they bring her mother in out of nowhere, and then they just fix all of their problems over muffins, which I just thought was sort of a terrible thing to do when you had this deep, long, brooding, I have no mommy problem, to fix it in one issue over muffins is a little trivializing, you know?
That is, unfortunately, I'm not overly familiar with what's been going on in the New 52, and my personal frame of reference predates it by decades.
Well,
she pretty much just summed it up, though.
Yeah, but so
I mean, that's pretty much what happened.
Well, I think
one issue muffins, and I like muffins. I'm not blaming the muffins.
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing here is that Jasmine's frame of reference for a lot of these very familiar, iconic characters. The neat thing I'm discovering is that we're talking about two entirely different characters, even though they share the same name and history.
Exactly.
And that's something I had not occurred to me is, you know, post New 52, if you came in at New 52 with even a vague idea of what came before, your frame of reference is entirely different than mine.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know the oversexed Starfire. I mean, she was a little oversexed, but not to the just horrendous degree, the embarrassing degree that you're describing.
And really, a lot of Starfire's oversexedness is in her art. One could make an argument that one of the things that bothers Andy about her level of commitment is just a statement against monogamy, in a sense. And not everybody in this world is monogamous, and just like they're tackling that whole gay issue thing right now. Maybe eventually we'll see in comics people tackling away from the norm of monogamy. I don't think they're doing it right, but that doesn't mean that they didn't try in some sense, and we might get there later.
When you're breaking ground like that, there are always, or almost always, growing pains.
Yes.
Because it is so new, and people don't know how to put themselves in the position of, you know, how do you write polyamorous characters? How do you write things
and
you don't
personally...
And the
modern polyamory
as
well, which is a new thing even in our society, and if we're saying that whole comics reflecting the society thing. Society hasn't figured out modern polyamory either.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of, it's like anything like that. Tony Stark, you know, when you first started to introduce the idea of an alcoholic character, I'm sure it was a little heavy-handed.
Oh, God, it was really heavy-handed.
Yeah. And, you know, people who have experienced going through that debilitating alcoholism and recovery and, you know, becoming sober would look at that and it's a farce. But that was just sort of, you have to over-exaggerate things sometimes early on just to get them out there. And then once they're out there, once that genie's out of the bottle, then you can come in, people can come in behind you after that trail is oftentimes overly blazed.
And slashed and burnt.
Yes. And you begin to see a more sophisticated approach to a lot of these things. So that we may just be seeing the birth of some new direction, some new ground.
But I'm sorry, but on the polyamorous thing, I think that's reaching. I really think that's reaching when it comes to Starfire. When I read that issue and I saw that those panels in that issue, that is not, you know, and I can recognize things for what they are. When I read that, all I read was, we're trying to make an adult comic book boobies, and, you know, we're trying to attract a male audience, and that's all I could see. It wasn't like, we're blazing a trail.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened since. They wrote that. They published that. The entire internet got really angry about it, and then they toned it the fuck down.
Thankfully, for that, you know?
And so I want to say that the only thing that they've continued to make the offense is her in the art, and they've just given her this awesome armor that I totally
love. That's great.
That armor.
And so, atoned for that particular quote-unquote sin, that's wonderful. And I could not be happier that you know, society as a whole has spoken and said, it is unacceptable for you to have done this based on what you have set up prior to this happening. You know, this is offensive, and correct the course, and they did. I'm happy about that. That means that somebody out there is listening. That's nice. But it should never have happened in the I take issue with that. And I take issue with that because I don't want women to feel that they shouldn't be reading comic books. I don't want women to feel that I don't want men or women to be turned off as children against this medium that I love. There's a lot of things on both sides of that fence that I really feel can do that. And this is one of those things. And you'll find that I feel very strongly. That's something I feel very strongly about on either side of things, whether it's, you know, something in, you know, the Batman cartoon, the green. Okay. The balance to that is the Green Lantern CG cartoon that they're peddling right now that just looks like horrible ass that nobody should ever watch. It's not exactly the same, but I can tell you that it's turning people off from reading the Green Lantern comic books, which are actually brilliantly illustrated. You know, if that's what the Green Lantern looks like, why do I want to read it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And the movie didn't help any either.
Hey, if we willingly suspend our disbelief, the movie wasn't horrible.
Well, I loved the movie, but I've read Green Lantern. I went to the movie with a bunch of my in-laws who have not read Green Lantern, and it was a horrible experience for them, and now I can't get them to read Green Lantern.
See, everybody I've talked to had the exact opposite experience of that.
Oh, no. I have
Catherine,
a,
for instance. Catherine really liked the movie, didn't she, Cole?
She enjoyed it. We both enjoyed it, but I can see why it suffers so terribly, because they had a hold of something that was really cool, and there were just so many missteps in trying to figure out some way to make it its own thing, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're trying too hard to make it something unique and different that...
Well, okay, so let's bring it back around the horn. Jasmine, I'm going to let you close the show. You know, Cole and I are, you know, dudes that you're the female, you're the one that has the, you know, the women's studies background. Cole and I can only speculate.
Yes. And as masterfully as I can do that, I'll never, you know, be able to touch the reality of understanding.
Yeah. Well, you bring that up, and you've really put me in a hot seat there, because all of my women's studies degrees are in Asian women's studies and not women in the West, and we're talking about Western.
But you have, I'm guaranteeing you have a stronger grasp of the experience than either Cole or I do. I would hope. Maybe not Cole.
Yeah. I can't say my degree helped me a whole lot more than just being a woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what have you experienced here? I mean, how would you close this show out?
Well, I guess the big thing for me, and the big sort of bleeding heart moment for me, is women in comics. It's problematic. There are as many problems here as there is sort of women in any other media, and I just don't want people to give up on it because of that. You can still be a woman and read comics, even if no one at your comic book shop will give you the time of day, and so you end up ordering your comics on Amazon because nobody will talk to you about them. That was me earlier today. That was what I was telling Andy about. And, you know, just because the costumes aren't really fair or what you like, and there aren't as many female characters as you would really like, that doesn't mean that comics can't still entertain you, can't still make you think, can't still be enjoyable. And so to keep trying, and maybe we have to be more patient as women, and there's still a lot of learning and growing to do in the comic industry. I do want to think it's getting better, and I do want to continue believing it and continue voicing our opinions so they continue to listen to us. And so it will only get better. And, you know, by the time I'm giving comics to my daughter or whatever, I can be really proud of the fact that I've been into this since I was younger. And I think anyone can, and I think they are accessible, even if it's a little bit harder. It's worth it.
I don't think I could have summed that up even nearly as eloquently as you just did. Exactly. Paul, do you have any final words?
Well, I have to echo the fact that one of the things that has been really wonderful to see, we talked a bit about, you know, girls in the comic shop and stuff like that, and you see more and more women at the conventions nowadays, and the nice thing is that there's so many reasons, so many things that are bringing women in beyond just the stars and the creators who are there signing, and you see a lot of, the really nice thing, you see a lot of women in costuming now, you see a lot of women who are into collecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as years of as a show dealer, we started to see more and more women collecting action figures and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, they'd oftentimes be there with a boyfriend or husband, but they, in much the same situation as Jasmine, they were the one who were the collector.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a time when that would be like, what? But the important thing is, as more women get into these things, speak not just with your wallet, speak with your voice, get in contact with the comic companies, complain about the things that are wrong, and help drive the market to recognize that there is a female audience out there that you ought to be speaking to just as with, you know, with just as much fervor and just as much attention as you speak to your longstanding male audience.
I am not going to say a word. I'm going to let you guys stand on that.
You are so terrified of...
both of you in equal parts, that was amazing, honestly. Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on and lending some credence to two guys who occasionally might totally act like girls, but aren't actually girls, to have this discussion with us and lend some validity and some very, very, very powerful points to this conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on and doing this.
I enjoyed it so much. Bring me back anytime, especially if you guys talk about collectibles, because I totally was like, hey, Cole, I have like 4 points on that. And I'm like, oh, we're wrapping up.
I know. And we will.
Yes, we will definitely be talking collectibles, because that's my bag, baby.
And I'm hoping that the next show we can get you on won't be as heavy as this one, or segue the next show, which is religion and comic books. I'm going to get burned at the stake. Let's go around the horn. Jasmine, do you have anything that you want to plug, or anything, or anybody, or any way that people can get a hold of you or talk to you now that you're going to be a Z-list celebrity for appearing on this show?
No, the whole celebrity thing totally scares me, but I mean, Andy, you've retweeted me a bunch. And so if people want to get a hold of me on Twitter or tweet me and ask for my address, I would be willing to talk. I promise I will try not to be too shy.
Okay, great. Cole, plug it.
Well, Andrew and I can, when we're not found here doing this show and God knows what else here, you can find us over at www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com, where we're joined by Mrs. Johnny Cole and our fearless leader, Rick Gutierrez, as the core for the United States of Geekdom, churning out shows pretty much twice a month when we're up to it. Andrew can occasionally be heard on the Collector Sector, which he created, and is now thankfully concentrating a lot on this show, because this show is dynamite. Of course,
it's still going to appear on Collector Sector.
Yeah, it'll still be there from time to time. We couldn't live without you. And of course, if you're listening to this, ideally you've also been visiting the Jedi Cole Universe, home of such wonderful periodic, what the hell they're called, features as What Would Comic Book Villains Do and Odd eBay. And the soon-to-be-released It Came from the Dollar Store.
Which is awesome.
That sounds like fun. Can I plug, or will you edit this out, that people should write in and convince Cole that I should do a doll collecting podcast?
Convince Cole. Cole's convinced. They need to convince you.
What they need to do is write and tell you to do it.
Exactly.
No, I've been thinking about it since you guys were like, hey, Jasmine, you should do this thing. And I'm like, oh, okay.
So what we have here, because those of you who weren't party to our conversation the night before as we were, you know, getting everything set up and ready to go, probably hearing the genesis right now of Jasmine's doll collecting show, which has yet to be named. But trust me, as many shows as I've been part of that I've personally created, it literally is on the name, and it will come to you like a bolt out of the blue. One day you'll just be sitting around doing nothing in particular to do with whatever it is, and this perfect name will hit you. I can't tell you how many times, you know, over the years when I started the General Interest Fan Club years ago, Fandom at Random, that just, I was sitting at work one day and I was like, Fandom at Random. And where did that even come from? So I think what we're hearing now is a future show on the Jedi Cult Podcasting Network. And frankly, I can't wait, because this is what I want on the network, is a diverse cross-section of fandom. That's what this is really all about. And I'm very excited that you're interested.
Yeah, I just got to find someone to do it with me, because I'm not doing it alone.
Yeah, from what I understand, and honestly, I've considered doing something where I was going to do a just sort of little rant of my own, and decided, no, I'm not going to do that, because it gets kind of sad when you try to do these things on your own. Not necessarily sad, but I think, you know, when you have somebody to play off of, it really does make a difference. And that's why Rick, when he started Amazing Comic Cast, it was just him. And they realized, you know, one voice just isn't enough. So talk to people, figure out who you've got a good dynamic with, and go for it.
And with that, I'm going to sign off for the third issue of Hey Kids Comics with this. Everybody out there, please do not forget to buy, read, and most importantly, enjoy comic books. Thank you all for listening. Tune in next week when we do Religion and Comics. Say goodnight, folks.
Good night.
Good night.